Hey there. Welcome to the second episode of The Apartment Cast, the official podcast of the National Apartment Association, the voice of the rental housing industry. I'm your host, Frank Mock, broadcasting from NAA's headquarters just outside our nation's capital, where I'll be providing you with ongoing insight from rental housing industry leaders on all things apartments, from leadership to operational strategy to federal advocacy and more. So let's just jump right in. And we're live. I'm excited to have Paula Munger here with us today. Paula, welcome. Let's start at the beginning. Logical place to start. First, tell us who you are, what you do at the National Apartment Association.
I'm Paula Munger, and I'm the Vice President of Research for NAA.
And you've spent your career researching, analyzing, and studying the economics of real estate. What drives your fascination with this line of work?
It's, wow, I mean, real estate, you can't go about daily activities in your life without interacting with real estate, right? So you leave your rental or your owned home and you go to your office or a construction site or a hospital and you drop your kids off at school and then you go to the grocery store and just all those, the intertwining of real estate and life, is what really got me into it.
You know, there's so many things I want to talk to you about today, but the first is really a big picture. There has been just a ton of change in the rental housing market, in the fundamentals in the past few months. Can you just walk me through some of the overarching trends?
Yeah, so basically we're in a slowdown right now. And when you think about 2021 and the record-breaking year we had, having a slowdown is neither surprising nor alarming. But right now, we see leasing activity slumping a bit. We see rental rates falling on a monthly basis. We have some negative absorption. And certainly, we're seeing the interest rate impacts on transactions. So fewer transactions getting done, volumes are down, and we're just starting to see some pricing coming down as well. So we're just going through a slowdown period, again, expected. But, you know, We're in a solid place to deal with a potential recession coming up.
And definitely a recession is something or a prospective recession, I should say, is something I want to get into a little later. One thing that really fascinates me, and I know it's something you watch closely, is the labor market. And labor shortages, especially in the rental housing sector, have been an ongoing challenge for quite some time. What are you seeing on the labor front, you know, both overall and then specific to sort of real estate and hospitality?
Yeah, so, and you're right, because I've been at NAA for almost 7 years, and I don't remember a time when a member hasn't said, I'm having a hard time getting maintenance technicians. but not only maintenance tech. So our industry is certainly having, like many other industries, having a hard time recruiting and retaining talent, and that's because the labor market is so tight right now. And we were starting to have some relief with job openings. We had record high job openings. They were starting to come down. Labor just released, the BLS just released it yesterday. They're back up. So we are back now to 1.9 openings per one unemployed person. That's tremendous. So there's so much competition out there. It's hard to get people in the door. It's hard to keep them in the door because they're being, you know, given other offers. We have 50-year unemployment rates still right now at 3.5%. But in terms of apartments, so we use a database called Lightcast, and it actually, it's not actual jobs. It's hard to get to apartment jobs because the Labor Department classifies them in this broader group of real estate. So, but this Lightcast database, we are able to pull job postings for only the apartment sector. And we do see, and we also look at competing sectors. You mentioned hospitality. Right. So very similar skill sets to what you need in the property industry. And for the fourth quarter, we use this data for our apartment job snapshot. We just released the fourth quarter. And Lightcast forecasts growth of job postings. And for apartments, they're forecasting 1.7% growth next year. Now, that's compared to 3.5% last year. So we're definitely expecting a softening in the labor market. Not seeing it yet as I just mentioned. But hotels are expecting that industry for postings to fall by 1.6% after rising 6.5%. So when you look at apartments versus, we also look at retail, it's certainly looking better than the other sectors next year, but there's always going to be challenges, especially when you think about the record high, I won't say record, decades level high completions we're probably going to get next year. So all that space comes online, you need all those on-site staff. So I expect it to stay really competitive into next year.
And again, to your point, especially in the on the maintenance side of things, you have referenced recession, and I know you've been watching inflation for quite some time. And you produced the NAA inflation tracker, a monthly product, which I think is just a super helpful tool for the industry. One aspect I find interesting is the lag in shelter costs collection at BLS. Can you explain that aspect of the CPI and how it affects the released data?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So shelter costs, there's two measures of it in the CPI. One is the rent of your primary residence, and one is owner's equivalent rent. And they're both self-reported. So every 6 months, the BLS asks renters and homeowners what they think, one, what their rent is, obviously, for a renter, and for a homeowner, what do you think you can rent your house for? I mean, think about that. It's right. Really subjective. Right. Your house is the best, isn't it? Anyway, and that doesn't mean, by the way, many other parts of the CPI, the basket of goods, they're updated monthly. These two measures are updated monthly, but because the survey is based on a six-month cycle, until you get a full data set, it could feasibly be a full 6 months. So there is a lag there. Now, there have been a lot of studies, especially since we've seen inflation go up so much, on how long is that lag, including one from the Federal Reserve Bank. And it seems to be anywhere between 8 to 12 months. So when you look back at 2022, I think CoStar was the first company to start reporting a decline in rents, monthly rents, in August. Mm-hmm. So when you do the math on that, if we take the earliest of the data providers and the earliest on what we expect is the lag, that puts us into April. And honestly, it could go till summer. And because it's a third of CPI, it's really impacting what CPI is right now.
It's very interesting. Switching gears just slightly, it's said that demographics are our destiny. Can you talk a little bit about U.S. demographics and the opportunities and challenges they pose for rental housing?
Yeah, so lots of interesting things going on the demographic front. Census just released their 2022 population estimates, and there's good news, which is awesome. First, international immigration is way up. It was over 1 million. That's at levels we saw it in the early teens. And that's good for the rental housing industry because immigrants tend to rent first before they own, sometimes for a long period of time. And the 1 million doesn't mean that 1 million people showed up at the borders and said, hi, we're here. They could have right. been here already, but it means their status changed. So they either did come here, they got a green card, or they got their citizenship. But even when you think about, so they're getting a green card and citizenship, it's far more likely that they're going to stay in housed in where they are and be a renter for some time. The other thing that happened were deaths did not go up, which is pretty amazing when you think about how old the population is getting and all of these respiratory illnesses that we have. So deaths stayed at about the same level. And then the birth rate went up for the first time in 7 years. So those are all good things. And the other thing, I want to talk about millennials.
Please.
Because I feel like nobody talks about them anymore. Like all of a sudden, oh, they must all be homeowners. They're not. Right. And obviously our members know that. But what I wanted, this is to me, it's just such a staggering number. There are 17.7 million millennials under the age of 30
Wow.
right now.
Wow.
So are they all going to be homeowners? No. are they, they probably have, many of them haven't even formed their own households yet. So I'm certain, I look at that and I think there's some demand flowing there. The other generation, of course, is Gen Z. They're not as big as the millennials, but one in five people right now are Gen Z. And the oldest is 25. So that's another sort of steady stream of demand we can expect. And those are all opportunities. And now I'm going to get to a challenge. The 65 plus age cohort is tremendous. And they have the highest homeownership rate. It hovers around 80%, hardly ever strays from that number. But still, when you look at that, we're expecting 20 million more 65 plus people between now and 2035. And this is, by the way, you know about our demand research, and that's it really gets into the age components in that research. But when you do the math, that's still 4 million renters coming from that cohort over the next 12 or so years. So I think mostly we're seeing a lot of opportunities and with some challenges on the horizon too.
And I can imagine that with sort of a more recent trend of renting as a first preference, as opposed to the traditional idea of homeownership being the ultimate goal, and especially seeing some of maybe potentially the talk about a generation that doesn't get mentioned
yes, very much. I think it's ours.
Gen X, you know, who may look at some of the challenges of homeownership, the need to maintain the house, the expenses related to that, the ability to live in places, especially now. I'm not going to be the one to declare the pandemic over, but as nightlife, restaurants, as that stuff opens back up and people feel more comfortable going out, the ability to live closer to those locations, generally renting offers you potentially a better living situation. And then, you know, I don't want to pay for a separate gym, a separate pool, and so on and so forth. So is there, you know, some underlying demand just from this idea that, that folks are choosing to rent as opposed to wanting to own, just as a philosophy of their housing situation?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing that more and more. And just, and you mentioned it, you mentioned all the amenities and the, and during the pandemic, and if you don't have to be tied to an office and you want to even just, I'm going to try living here for a little while. I'm going to try living there. You can't do that if you own a home. And we do, you know, we hear this concept of digital nomads,
right?
And people being nomads and just being able to move around and try out different places to live and see where they might want to spend some time and start a family or whatever. But it really does offer that flexibility. And the other thing that's happening right now is, even though home prices are starting to come down and because mortgage rates have gone through the roof and home prices were already going through the roof, remember they're coming down on a monthly basis, they are still up year over year. Renting is now far more affordable in many parts of the country. Marcus and Millichap does this this gap chart that shows a typical homeowner's cost for a median home price home and a typical renter's cost, and it's now at its highest point ever. It's $1,142 cheaper to rent right now than to own. And that's an average across the country, so obviously it's going to vary, but that's another good reason to, you know, feel good about being in this sector.
Fascinating. Yeah, that's quite a chunk of change. And certainly all real estate is market-based. Everything is local.
Asset-based, yeah.
But still, looking across the entire country and seeing these differences in expenses, that does, I think, paint a particular picture of where folks will find the most value and what is most affordable. And, you know, I think there's absolutely no question that housing affordability is one of the biggest issues facing our country. And myself, I'm firmly in the supply and demand camp on this issue. And I do think a lot of well-intentioned policies like rent control really only serve to exacerbate this problem. As a matter of fact, I think they don't even begin to understand the problem.
Yeah.
From your perspective and recognizing there are really no silver bullets in this world, what are the barriers to truly solving this problem?
solving affordability. How much time do we have?
As much as it takes.
Okay. Well, I'm with you. I am in the, you know, I have an economics degree, and I am totally in the supply and demand camp. So even though we're seeing a lot of completions this year, past few years, really healthy too, it's not going to make a dent. We underbuilt for decades. Did not have enough housing, and that goes for both for sale housing and rental housing. And one of the things we looked at when we did the barriers research, you might remember, we put that out a couple years ago. It's an index, and it measures how difficult or easy it is to build in 58 markets across the country. And we had to break it down into sub-indices because there are so many barriers. So we had 10 different things. I won't name them all, but some of them, community involvement, otherwise known as NIMBYism,
right.
Cost, and cost are land costs, labor costs, construction costs, materials costs, fees. There are so many fees when you're trying to develop a multifamily property. Infrastructure constraints, growth restrictions. Some municipalities put a cap on growth. Approval timelines, political complexity, just the whole entitlement process. It's super complicated, and it's very challenging, and it's really hard to pencil. So you go through all of that, and then you try and pencil to someone with a lower income, and it's just not going to work. Even with a median income, it's really hard to make it work. And in terms of lower income, the best way in terms of solving that is just really increasing government subsidies, government assistance, government incentives where developers will help, certainly easing zoning restrictions. We're starting to see that a little more across the country in some municipalities. And the other thing I want to mention with affordability is a lot of people don't talk about the other side of the equation, which is income.
Right.
Now, income levels have been coming up, thankfully, the past few years, but they were stagnant for a very long time. And in fact, income did not keep up with rent growth for a good two decades. So again, it's sort of that we're behind. And
right.
Even though things are getting better, it's really going to take a long time to get things more balanced.
Yeah, somebody once told me that the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago.
Yes.
The next best time being today. And certainly I think we can all understand this idea of NIMBYism.
Yeah.
It's something we talk about often. As a matter of fact, I think a very famous basketball player has recently been in the media for expressing some disappointment about potential development in where he lives. We'll not say any names to protect the innocent, but a quick Google search, and I'm sure our listeners can find all the information they need. Kind of along the same lines, there's been a lot of talk about adaptive reuse and conversions, and I know you've been diving into apartment conversions, specifically the commercial to residential, as a potential solution to the lack of housing supply. What have you discovered on this front?
Yeah, so we're actually going to have a session on this at Apartmentalize, and it's specifically on office. And I wanted to focus on office because, sure, it's easier to convert a hotel because, it has more of the living features. But hotels aren't suffering right now.
Right.
Offices are. And I think there's a lot of naysayers out there and it absolutely is expensive and it absolutely is complicated, but I don't think we should shy away from it. And actually CBRE just came out with a report within the past few days. They are anticipating a 75% increase in office conversions in 2023. So just when you look at the backdrop of all these offices sitting empty, Castle Systems, the key card people.
Right.
They just got to one of the markets, I think it's Houston, got to around 66% occupancy. That's crazy. So there's a lot of empty office buildings, and I think this panel is going to be great. It has a developer on it who has converted office to residential and also an operator who's working in that, one in the D.C. area and one in Wilmington. So I think we really need to look harder and challenge ourselves with that. And there are some cities that are stepping up too, like New York. New York is trying to rezone a huge swath of Manhattan to allow more residential in some of the older office buildings. And Chicago is also doing some things too.
I'm very much looking forward to that session. I really appreciate you coming on today. And as I like to ask and plan on asking future guests, if there's one thing you'd want listeners to walk away with from our conversation, what would that be?
I think it's that there's really not a better sector of real estate to be in right now than multifamily. You know, you hear everyone needs a place to live. It sounds so cliche, but it is really true. We weathered the Great Recession, not without some challenges. And then we had this record-breaking year 1 year after a global pandemic. So I think, whatever's coming down the pike, we should be able to get through it without too much difficulty. And I just another CB report of investor intentions. Multifamily is still what investors, when they filled out their survey, say they would choose to invest in. That garnered the plurality of responses at 38%, followed by industrial 28%. So I think, and when we look at the economy to a potential recession, because of all those strong indicators we're still having, I don't think there's any possibility that we're falling off a cliff this year. We are going to have some bumps, and owners and operators are going to have some challenges and might see some quarters of declining rent growth or months of declining rent growth. But I think overall we'll get out to the other side in pretty good shape.
That's very exciting, especially the most recent bumps in the rear view, or a very big bump, as it were.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us. And we'll certainly see you at Apartmentalize, and we'll stay tuned for all the various research products coming out of the National Apartment Association. Paula, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Frank.
Thanks again to Paula Munger for sharing her time with us today. The research products she and her team put out, including NAA's Inflation Tracker, the Apartment Market Pulse, Apartment Job Snapshot, the Affordability Watch, the Income Expense IQ, Special Reports, and a whole lot more, they're all available to you on naahq.org. And as Paula referenced during our conversation, she'll be speaking at NAA's flagship event, Apartmentalize. Apartmentalize is the hub for rental housing education and networking. It's a showcase of new products and services for the industry. And I can tell you the energy at Apartmentalize is like nothing else. It's 11,000 attendees all there to share ideas, make connections, and get motivated. Apartmentalize is taking place in 2023, June 7th through the 9th. In Atlanta. You will not want to miss this event. Register as soon as you can for the best available rates at apartmentalize.naahq.org. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you on the next episode of Apartment Cast, available on all your favorite podcast platforms. Take care.